and welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related, and I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great hour for you coming up here. We're obviously going to catch up on the news and all of that, and there's plenty. But our breaches of the week is actually going to be the top breaches of 2022. You know I do it every radio show, and I'm going to basically be keeping up on this. I've got notes for the entire year. We're going to talk about the most spectacular and damaging data breaches of 2022. And our deep dive is going to be on predictions for cybersecurity for 2023. What is the world going to look like? For cybersecurity, for hacking, for all of that. So stick around. Super important episode. We're going to kick off the new year right. We're going to get these predictions right. And then I'm going to listen to this at the end of the year and see how good, bad, or ugly I did. But there you go. And with that, as always, let's start with the news. And in artificial intelligence news, if you didn't know, some programmers are leveraging artificial intelligence to actually create code in apps and programs that you may use. You might go to a website. Part of it might have actually been built by artificial intelligence, or you might be using an app where the artificial intelligence created some of the code. Maybe the developer of that app did not have the requisite expertise, and they went to a platform that said, hey, build me this code to do this in my program. That's really cool, and it really helps everybody out. But a new study has come to light that shows that the code developed by artificial intelligence is quote-unquote inherently insecure. Now, this is coming from TechSpot, and here's what's going on. Code-generating algorithms can bring an insecurity factor to the programming table, as a new study involving several developers has recently found. Looking specifically at Codex, which is an AI platform developed by OpenAI, they also are the engine of Copilot, which is the AI engine of GitHub. Essentially, what the study did was recruit 47 different developers, and these developers ranged from undergraduate students to experienced professionals. And the developers were tasked with using Codex to solve security-related problems in programming languages such as Python, JavaScript, C, and other high-level languages. Now, the researchers said that when the programmers had access to Codex AI, the resulting code was more likely incorrect or insecure compared to the quote-unquote handmade solutions that were conceived by the control group, meaning the control group had the same problem, but they had to code it by hand, meaning using their knowledge and expertise, and the other group basically went to the AI and said, solve this problem for me, and the code that the AI spit out was insecure according to just good old human ingenuity. On top of this, the programmers with AI-assisted solutions were more likely to say that their insecure code was secure compared to the control group, meaning those that were relying on AI automatically made the assumption to say, well, the AI is going to knock it out. It's going to be perfect. It's going to be way more secure than if I'm just doing this off the top of my head. And that ended up being the opposite, meaning doing it off the top of your head with your knowledge and expertise actually was better than the artificial intelligence. Now, Neil Perry, who's a PhD candidate at Stanford and the co-author, he's the study lead and co-author, said that, quote, code-generating systems are currently not a replacement for human developers. He also went on to mention that developers could be using AI-assisted tools to complete tasks outside of their own areas of expertise or to speed up programming tasks that they were already skilled in, but both should be concerned because we should always double-check this code, meaning, if you're doing this, let's say I know how to program Python, but I don't know JavaScript, but I need a JavaScript, and I go to the AI and say, hey, AI, write me this, secure JavaScript. That's one of those problems. Or if I'm just using it to speed up programming, meaning it's going to take me 10 hours to build this code, the AI will take an hour to do it, then I might rely on the AI to simply to get it done. But this is the problem that we have. It's not a replacement just yet, according to this. It's inherently insecure, according to this study, which is interesting. Now, as AI develops and improves, I'm assuming we're going to see an improvement in its security AI programming, but there you go. So right now, good old-fashioned human engineering and human ingenuity is outpacing AI in terms of security development. And so I'd rather see an app basically be developed longer and be more secure than being developed quickly and insecure. And so that is your artificial intelligence news of the week. And in Facebook news, Facebook was caught violating children's privacy again. Now, this is coming from GovTech, and here's the latest incident of Facebook just being Facebook. I still don't know why anybody's using this platform to give anything sensitive out. But here's what's going on. The American Educational Research Association, or AERA, in a news release about 2 weeks ago, revealed the results of a study saying that social media posts by schools could be compromising the privacy of students. Now, according to the study, schools across the country have shared nearly 5 million Facebook posts, that's across the United States, that include identifiable images of students, with some 726,000 of these posts identifying children by their full names, potentially putting the students' privacy at risk. Meaning, you know, your kids in school and the teacher or whoever decides to take a picture of them in class, puts it online and say, hey, look at little Johnny at school, blah, blah, blah. And boom, there we go. Your kid's out there, you know, possibly without your knowledge, maybe the full name of that child, et cetera, et cetera. Now, from 2005 to 2020, this is the time frame of the study, examined publicly accessible posts on Facebook by all public schools and school districts within the United States, and schools published roughly 18 million posts, and that frequency increases annually. The news release said that about 13.9 million of those 18 million posts included images of people of any age, leading researchers to estimate that 4.9 million had identifiable information of underage students. Now, this obviously is going to be a major concern as technology continues to improve, according to study co-author Joshua Rosenberg. Quote, it is likely that the photos are being accessed by a range of actors, including government agencies, predictive policing companies, and those with nefarious intent. Rosenberg is an assistant professor of STEM education at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. And he also said, and I quote, the threat to privacy will continue to grow, perhaps quickly, due to expanding facial recognition technology. And this is exactly what we are talking about here. You know, so there was a challenge on Facebook that said, oh, yes, post a picture of yourself from 10 years ago and, you know, next to a picture of yourself now. And my first thought was they're training the artificial intelligence to see changes, you know, in humans over time. And if you have been in the Facebook ecosystem since, let's say, you were an infant, meaning, you know, you had a child and you were putting their pictures all over Facebook to share it with, you know, your Facebook community of friends, quote unquote friends, I should say, as that kid grows up and Facebook's been around, what, 15 plus years now, something like that, longer than that, I think, you know, for the general public, originally was in colleges, you know, they've got all of this information. So your child may now be 10, 11, 12, 15, whatever. And there have been pictures over time, not to mention your schools doing this. Now, interestingly enough, a lot of schools give you, the parent, the ability to opt out of having your kids have their information or pictures be put on school websites, Facebook, all that kind of stuff. Meaning, you'll still get your yearbook picture, you can still have your class photo, but, you know, you're not getting all of these Facebook posts that are tagging your child, you know, typically with full name into these posts. And so check that out. That's what I would highly recommend everybody do, because right now, if you've got a minor, if you have somebody that's under the age of 18 in your life and you're a parent or a guardian, the responsibility for their privacy relies heavily on you, whether you're educating them on privacy, whether you're keeping them private. When they turn 18, hopefully they've been properly educated and will make good choices, you know, with their privacy, but you do not need to intentionally feed the beast. And so there you go. We'll see where this happens, but understand that Facebook, once again, is in the hot seat for violating children's privacy. And while it's not necessarily Facebook's fault at this point, meaning, you know, if I'm a school teacher and I'm putting up my first grade class on Facebook, Facebook right now is not bearing responsibility for that, but they can be creating filters, you know, for schools that basically, you know, for school districts that say, hey, you know, maybe it's a warning. You're posting, you know, pictures of underage children publicly on Facebook. Do you want to do this, that would be a nice warning, I think, for teachers that, quite frankly, are not educated in cybersecurity, you know, like most of the population, you know. So here we are. So we'll see where this goes. But that is your Facebook news of the week. And in New Year's resolution news, I'm giving you, my gentle listener, a New Year's resolution. I want you to be more private and secure in 2023 and beyond. If you're a longtime listener to this, I hope you've taken much of my advice to heart as I'm talking about these things. But there you go. So just make sure that you are being more secure. You're being more private in your life. Enable things like multi-factor in your life. Multi-factor authentication. Almost every website has it. You can get it for free. You can go download a free app called Authy and attach it to everything from, you know, Facebook to Google to LinkedIn to your bank and on and on and on. Amazon, take your pick. Enable that. It makes you that much harder to hit. It'll exclude about 90% of all criminal hackers out there that are not sophisticated enough to figure out how to get around that. On top of that, make sure you've got good and encrypted backups in your life. Backing up your data and storing it offsite is such an important thing. I don't care if it's a home or a business, encrypt it so it can't be stolen from you, but have good backups in your life and encrypt your sensitive data. Don't store passwords, you know, like on a notepad or you know, in a task, you know, or a note in Outlook or something like that. Encrypt your sensitive data. It's going to make you that much harder to hit. On top of that, vet the apps that you're using. Are they good? Are they, you know, are they actually legitimate? Is it actually from Microsoft or is it a Microsoft knockoff? You know, is this being developed in a country where you have no legal recourse under the law? Or is it a country where, yeah, if you push comes to shove, you can sue them or you have rights automatically under that country? Think TikTok in China. It's developed in China. It's, you know, it's beholden to the Chinese government. When your data gets moved to China, you think you're getting that back? You think you're suing the Chinese government? No, but you can technically sue an American company. Or if you're an EU citizen, you've got GDPR. So make sure that you vet your apps. Make sure that they are good and solid and do exactly what they say they should. And in countries, that you have legal recourse. It takes 3 minutes to vet an app. Go ahead and do that. On top of that, watch what you post online. Everything that you post online can be data mined, especially if it's in the Facebooks of the world. We all know that person that uses, you know, Facebook or whatever as their personal therapy session, but don't. Why do you need that? If you want to talk one-on-one with a friend or a group of friends, there are private, more secure platforms that aren't data mined out there. Signal, for example, is a text messaging app or messaging app that you can install into your phone. And if you're on Signal and I'm on Signal, it's end-to-end encrypted. Nobody can read it. We can add other Signal users into our, you know, group texting, all that kind of stuff. So watch what you post online. Get more secure and better apps in your life. And on top of this, make sure your IoT devices or your Internet of Things devices are properly secured, meaning you're changing out those default passwords. You've got good wireless that they are on. They're not exposed to the internet. Also, make sure that they can work offline. If your thermostat can't work when the internet goes down, then how are you going to heat and cool, you know, your home? You know, we're sitting here in Chicago. We just went through a couple of days where the wind chill was like minus 35. If my internet gets knocked out and my thermostat, which is connected to the internet, now cannot power my air conditioning or my heating, that's a huge problem, right? So check them offline. Unplug your internet. Does your IoT still work? Great. You know, or can it go down? Meaning if you've got an Amazon Echo in your life and okay, you're going to be out that, but something critical IoT to the functioning, you know, of your home, make sure that it can work offline and on and on and on. But those are some of the basics there. So that is my New Year's resolution and my challenge to you. Go be more private. Go be more secure. There's a lot of good solutions out there. Thank you for listening to this, you know, this radio station, or this radio show, I should say, on a radio station. You know, if you're new to my show, I really appreciate you. If you've been a longtime listener, thank you very much. But please just be secure in whatever you do. That is my New Year's resolution for all of you. And let's move on. And in Twitter news, and we definitely need to talk about Twitter, but specifically we need to talk about the Twitter files. This needs discussion, but probably not why you think they do. Now, if you've been keeping up with the news, Twitter files, or the Twitter files, I should say, has basically been a series of data dumps by various journalists that Elon Musk has given access, a deep access into Twitter for, and they have been given information that they could vet with the understanding that it, one, that Elon Musk would claim full transparency in giving this, but two, that these journalists had to first publish on Twitter before publishing in their own respective publications or websites or blogs or whatever it is that they're doing. And he's picked some very high profile journalists, such as Barry Weiss, formerly of the New York Times, Matt Taibbi as well, and some others. And so with that, we need to discuss this because this is just very, very important. And I'm going to be very clear here. This is not about the contents of the Twitter files themselves. You can read those. You can make any conclusion you want about what they are, politically or otherwise. That's not my point. What I'm talking about here is the government reaction to the Twitter files, which opens up an interesting can of worms that may have been an unforeseen consequence of what happened here. Now, this is coming from a really good article by Natasha Lomas of TechCrunch, who brought this to my attention. So I'm quoting or paraphrasing her heavily. Now, these amplified data dumps are creating some issues for Twitter. Elon Musk's tactic of opening up its systems to external reporters could now come back in the form of regulatory sanctions. Ireland's Data Protection Commission, or DPC, which at least for now is Twitter's lead data protection regulator in the EU, is seeking more details from Twitter about the outsider data access. Now, according to a spokesperson talking to TechCrunch, the DPC has been in contact with Twitter this morning. We are engaging with Twitter on the matter to establish further details. Now, on top of this, Bloomberg also reported on concerns in the EU about outsiders accessing Twitter user data, citing tweets by Facebook's former chief information security officer, Alex Stamos, who posited publicly that a Twitter thread posted on December 8th by one of the reporters given access by Musk, quote, should be enough for the FTC to open an investigation of the consent decree, end quote. Now, if you didn't know, Twitter's FTC consent decree dates all the way back to 2011, and it relates to allegations that the company misrepresented the, quote, security and privacy, end quote, of user data over several years. Twitter was already fined $150 million back in May of 2022 for breaching that order, but future penalties could be a lot more severe if the FTC deems that Twitter is flagrantly breaching the terms of that agreement. And interestingly enough, the signs here are foreboding. Now, given the FTC's already put Twitter on notice last month, warning that, quote, no CEO or company is above the law, this is not good. Another consideration here is the EU's GDPR, or General Data Protection Regulation, which contains a legal requirement that personal data is adequately protected. And so the point here is that if they are giving, as these reporters are saying, we got deep access, so for example, Barry Weiss, formerly of the New York Times, claims the authors have broad and expanding access to Twitter's files. The only condition we agreed to was that the material would first be published on Twitter. You know, and so by virtue of that, that is a huge issue. Another writer, Abigail Schreier, said, and I quote, our team was given extensive unfiltered access to Twitter's internal communication and systems, end quote. And so if that is exposing user data, they are running in violation of privacy laws for the European Union, the United States' FTC, and probably other countries that are now looking at what Twitter is doing, which means Elon Musk may be on the hook, specifically Twitter may be on the hook for millions or potentially billions of dollars in fines worldwide for this move. So we're going to see where this happens, but that is your Twitter news of the day. I think it's interesting and terrifying all at the same time. Oh, and real quick, don't forget to follow me on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, basically your favorite social media platform. I'm either at Nick AESP or / Nick Espinoza at any one of those. Come feel free to follow me. It's always a good time. I do daily content on tech, on privacy, on cybersecurity. You'll be informed. I think it'll be interesting. So stick around and make sure to follow me.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for Breaches of the Week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout-out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I am more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout-out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And instead of doing Breaches of the Week like we normally do, we are the beginning of 2023. It's my first broadcast of 2023, so I want to do the worst breaches of 2022. Now, I went through all of my notes, and if you are a longtime listener of this radio show, you know that I do Breaches of the Week as a regular segment on this show. And so I went back through all of my notes, of which I take week after week after week, to go through 2022 to see what were some of the worst breaches. Now, these breaches didn't necessarily mean that the most money was stolen or the most records were released, but these breaches were the ones that had the most impact on either their vertical, on society, or whatever it is, or were some of the most sophisticated or spectacular data breaches out there. And so we're going to go through these. They're kind of in chronological order, obviously, except for our grand prize winner of 2022, which we will talk about, as well as also the runner-ups or honorable mentions, if you will. But with that, let's start in January in 2022, if you can remember that far back, because crypto.com got compromised. Now, criminals were able to compromise only 439 accounts on crypto.com, one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges out there, but over $30 million US in cryptocurrency was stolen from those 439 accounts. Obviously, a huge impact and basically a pretty much a black eye for the cryptocurrency community. Now, on top of that, in January, we also had another spectacular and unfortunate data breach, and that was the Red Cross. Now, highly confidential data on over 515,000 individuals worldwide were exposed, not to mention other data as well. And this was considered a very serious breach because the Red Cross, as you know, helps the disadvantaged. So we are talking refugees, detainees, missing persons, these kinds of individuals. And that is a huge, huge problem because these are the people that are the most disadvantaged economically. Oftentimes, if you're a refugee, you have little rights in the country that you're seeking refuge in until, you know, you're accepted, or detainees as well. Oftentimes are considered prisoners. And so this was a huge and important data breach that happened right out of the gate in January of last year, and the Red Cross. So hopefully you are not, have never been serviced by the Red Cross, but that was a huge one. Moving on, we had February Credit Suisse, which was a bomb dropping in the high-end billionaire slash warlord slash everything community, because Credit Suisse is a very private bank out of Switzerland, and they had 30,000 customer accounts exposed. Now, some of these accounts, as I alluded to, were owned by war criminals, human traffickers, corrupt leaders of governments, and also heads of state. It gave us a real good look into essentially what they were storing. The Swiss have been notorious over the decades or even centuries in banking that basically have extreme privacy. And so, you know, when you've got the warlords banking with you, obviously it's a real peek behind the curtain, in the same way that the Panama Papers a few years back were as well. But heads definitely rolled on this, and we saw some just spectacular disclosures in February with Credit Suisse. In March, we saw Microsoft get hacked by the Lapsus ransomware gang. Apparently, they got in, and platforms or products from Microsoft, like Cortana and Bing, as well as several others, were compromised. Microsoft, though, fortunately claimed no customer data was affected, but obviously that really erodes confidence in Microsoft, not that people were jumping ship from like Office 365 or whatever over this incident, but obviously that's a huge black eye for one of the largest platform and software providers in the world. Now, in May, we had a very interesting one because essentially there were three VPN apps out there that you could go ahead and download on Android and iPhone called SuperVPN, GeckoVPN, and ChatVPN. They got breached, interestingly enough, in 2021, but it came to light in 2022. And what was exposed were 21 million users, full names, usernames, country of origin, and just a ton of details that essentially were hit, meaning IP addresses, locations, all these kinds of things. This was a very huge problem. VPNs, or virtual private networks, are designed to obfuscate your traffic. They encrypt your traffic. They put you in a different country. And so if I'm connecting to, let's say, that website, you know, sitting here in Chicago, I'm connecting to a website in the United States, my VPN can have me coming out of Canada or Sri Lanka or anywhere else in the world. But if all of my data is exposed, now you know that Nick is sitting in Chicago, That's a huge problem, especially for dissidents worldwide that are opposing authoritarian regimes. We just saw major, major protests in Iran to the point where the government was actually considering changing laws, not to mention users in China, China being the largest surveillance state. And so when these were hit, that was a huge, huge problem everywhere. You also get what you pay for. Make sure you're getting a good VPN, ideally out of like a Switzerland, as I just talked about how tight Switzerland is on security, or Germany or the Netherlands. There's really good VPNs out there, but you're also going to pay. It's not going to be free. It's going to cost you give or take about $50 US per year for usually 5 devices or so. But if you use SuperVPN, GeckoVPN, and ChatVPN, they're actually storing all of your information, and a lot of VPN providers simply do not do that. But again, you pay for that service. That was May. Now let's flip on over to July, because Twitter, yes, Twitter of Elon, now Elon Musk fame, if you will, back then not Elon Musk fame, but he was, I believe, at that point talking about buying them. Twitter confirmed a data breach. 5.4 million accounts were compromised. We're talking about emails and phone numbers that went on sale in the dark web, which also included celebrities and other high-profile people's personal information. Obviously, it sucks when anybody gets hit, but oftentimes high-profile people and celebrities may have stalkers or those that wish them harm, for whatever reason, and so that's obviously not a good thing as well. The interesting part about this data breach is that it later in 2022, we found out that it wasn't just one hacking group that exploited a vulnerability in Twitter to get 5.4 million records on us. Actually, multiple hacking groups, criminal hacking groups, exploited the same vulnerability that Twitter had to basically take this same information multiple times. And so this was a huge, huge issue, pretty much a black eye for Twitter, although you could argue Twitter's got some issues right now, just given Elon Musk and everything else. I don't care if you love or hate the guy. Obviously, there's a lot of changes going on with Twitter. Some people love it, hate it. I don't care what you believe, but Twitter is in the news, not for this breach, but for obviously Elon Musk and all of that. Also in July, Samsung, the massive mobile phone maker. You might have one of their TVs or monitors or anything else that Samsung makes. I even think they make refrigerators. They got hit in July. So if you have a Samsung account, heads up, because they got hit in July, but they disclosed this breach in September. And in August is when they found it, and they determined that personal information on users that have Samsung accounts have been compromised. So if you have that Samsung phone and you also set up a Samsung account, or a smart TV or a computer monitor or, anything that Samsung makes, they make a ton of stuff. You definitely want to make sure that's secured and you've changed that password. That was July.
And stay tuned. Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show. As we take a quick break for a public service announcement, we'll be back right after that.